You are listening to the TriCast Gaming Podcast.
Greetings and welcome everyone to episode number 29 of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. I am your host, Grimlock, aka Philip Keating, and I am joined tonight by just the handsome, the best, the Rogue Vox, aka Mike Martinez.
Hello.
Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I am fantastic. Do you ever find it a problem whenever you like announce me like Mike Martinez? Is it hard to keep from saying Mark Martinez?
No. But I am also like concentrating really hard on how I enunciate it so that I don't screw it up. So maybe that's why.
Okay. Because I do that shit all the time, and it's my name.
What's your name, like, sir? I'm Mark Martinez. I mean, Mike Martinez.
Well, it's not that I say Mark. It's like I kind of say my name really fast, and it kind of sounds like Mark. Mm. And everybody says, so if I say, like if I pronounce my full name, Michael Martinez, people hear Marco Martinez. And if I say just Mike, they think I say Mark. So there's always a correction when I introduce myself. Always, almost guaranteed.
Yeah, I have a similar problem. It's just that like I tell people my name's Philip Keating, and they're like, "Oh, Phil, how are you doing?" And I'm like, "No, I said my name was Philip Keating."
Philip, we talked about this.
Not Phil. So yeah, I have a similar but not quite the same thing really that happens to me.
Right.
Well, Mike, I guess to tell the audience, we're without Adam tonight. We're recording a day earlier than we normally do. So if anything super exciting happens on Thursday, February the 4th, I'm sorry, but we will have to cover it next week. Apologies for that. But I am going out of town this weekend. My dad and I are going to be running his super awesome race car for the first time this year, this weekend at Circuit of the Americas in Austin. So we got to travel out tomorrow night to be ready to you know, set up and get going at the track on Friday afternoon. So we're recording on Wednesday, February the 3rd, which is not normal. And unfortunately, that meant that Adam couldn't be with us tonight. So I'm sorry, Adam. Please love me still.
Please.
Please.
Please, we need you.
Please. Yes, we do. We do, in fact, need your wonderful insights and editing skills. I'm sure he will be back with us next week. But Mike, how's your week going so far?
Well, seeing as it's only Wednesday, so far so good, but plenty of time for shit to go wrong. You know, there's Thursday and Friday.
Hey, you're over the hump of hump day. So you're more than halfway there.
Yeah, it's quite a feeling. It's been a week though, because I've been having to, like, what I do is supposed to be like a two-person job, but they aren't hiring anybody. So I'm having to do it alone, and some kind of stuff like will get not prioritized as far as getting it done, because there's just other stuff that's more important. So like some of my I have two areas I keep material, and they just look like shit for the past 4 months because I haven't had time to go get it. Either I can clean up an area or pull orders to make money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was I just flat out told them, hey, I need you guys to have someone in the shop cover me for a day, and I spent the whole day yesterday rearranging everything, and now I am sore because I haven't moved at all because I've been at a desk or just standing in one spot at work, and it's pretty tough having to move heavy-ass stainless steel all day.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know what you should do? You should just go to them and be like, you know what, look, I am doing a fantastic job here as one person. So why don't you just give me like a 30% raise and not hire a second person?
That would, yeah. I'll record that and then we can put it on the podcast and we can all laugh together.
I mean, I don't know. Why not? Like, just say, look, like I'm saving you 70% of someone's salary and I'm doing the work of two people.
I mean, we'll see what happens.
I mean, I think this. I would be persuaded if I was your boss.
Nah, my boss is a little more hard-headed than you.
I can see. Well,
I'm kind of semi looking for another job, just not because this place is awful. It's just I want to work closer to home. So,
gotcha.
That's what I'm doing. Well, but if this place pays me more, where I'm currently working, hell yeah, I'll stay there. But now, priority is getting closer.
What's your commute to work? Or do you mean like you want to be closer to like home, like where family's at?
No, I want to be closer to like my apartment.
Oh, okay. So what's your commute?
Yeah. Oh, it's 45 minutes.
That's not too bad. Mine's 30 minutes when I do go into the office. Mm-hmm. And I think that like 45 would be my max. But like now I've been a 30-minute commute for so long that like if someone tried to convince me to do like an hour commute, I'd be like, hell no, not happening.
Yeah, it's just and that's like with no traffic. So like if I were to leave like right before rush hour, dude, it would take me an hour. Mm. And I just, there's like plenty of jobs around me that's like within 10 minutes, maybe some, or fewer within walking distance that I could actually see myself working at. I just have to apply and actually have to interview me.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Well, we'll see what happens. Keep us updated on how that goes. I am similarly a little bit sore today. Typically we do our work soccer league on Tuesdays, which is what we did yesterday. We had work soccer league yesterday, but last week, because there was so much rain early in the week, it got postponed all the way out to Friday. So we had a Friday to Tuesday turnaround on two 90-minute soccer games. So I'm a little bit more than just a little bit sore.
Jeez, so. That's like in soccer, though. I mean, you're constantly running, I feel like. Like, you're not just standing still for too long. You're like it's constant movement.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's a little bit more standing around for me because I'm a little bit old and fat now. But I mean, for the most part, I am, you know, moving the pretty much the whole time that we play. So,
do you use your head to block the ball?
I'm not really that great of a header of the ball. I mean, the way that our league runs, there's not a whole lot of heading that has to be done anyway. There's some people, certainly there are taller guys that like to do it, and there's definitely some. I'm not that great at it though, so I tend to try to avoid situations where I need to. I mean,
that's a lot of weight to get up, you know what I mean, to jump. That's, you're lifting some weight doing that.
Sure, yeah. I mean, having said that, I did make two plays last night with my head. Both of them were defensive, actually. Normally, I'm an offensive player. I'll either play as the striker or sort of off the main striker and try to set things up. But in our league, you know, kind of a little more fluid. And because we're not full 11 on 11, you know, if somebody goes up, then almost all the time someone has to track back. So I was doing a lot of defending last night, just as, you know, tracking back and covering as other people went forward. And so I actually did make two particularly nice plays, intercepting passes with my head, which is unusual for me. But yeah, it always hurts, man. I'm always like,
well, I imagine.
Like, I think like about professional soccer players and I'm like, how do they do this? Like,
yeah, because like whenever somebody like a professional soccer player kicks the ball, that thing's moving.
It's so much harder. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I never thought about that. Damn.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, like one of them, like the guy had hit it pretty well, and I, you know, got up to block and headed it away, and I was like, man, I feel like a little bit of a headache creeping in just from one header. Like, what the hell.
Have you ever done that move and like it just hits your face like full on? What's that guy's name? The man, the myth, the legend?
Scott Sterling.
Scott Sterling. Did you ever Scott Sterling a ball?
No, I did actually. I did take one a little bit in the face last night. I was like trying to move between two people, and the guy got just enough of a flick, and it like pinched off of the other guy and straight up into my face. But not like straight. I guess it was like more of a glancing off the side of my face, but it still like got me in the face.
Never like balls that go into your face, though.
Yeah, unless they're yours. I mean, sorry. Moving on.
Oh my god.
Whoa, easy now.
Oh,
All right. In other news, I did catch up finally on WandaVision. I watched up through episode 4. I know you'd asked me about it last Friday.
Came out swinging that last episode. I really like. I'm invested now.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely episode 3 was already feeling a little bit better, mm-hmm. but episode 4 was great. And you have to think like we're halfway through. Like this is going to be an eight episode season, and mm-hmm. we're halfway through already. And you got to think like, man, I feel a little bit like episodes 1 and 2 were wasted. Mm-hmm. I could see doing one episode like that, but like they basically did like 2.5 episodes like that.
Yeah.
And it just feels a little bit wasted, but yeah, it's cool. I mean, you know, I guess small spoiler warning, but my theory now is that it is, and I'm giving everyone just a second to turn off if you don't want to hear, but my thought is that it's Wanda who has actually, you know, cut this whole town on some sort of fever dream.
Right, I kind of think it's kind of her, but I think there's something like influencing her, like some people influencing her. Because if you notice, whenever they're like identifying the townsfolk, there are a few people that didn't have like a license or like they weren't missing.
Hmm.
And I think those guys that weren't missing like are kind of influencing her a little bit.
Maybe so,
dude. And like that's okay. Another spoiler: that scene where they kind of cut to Vision. Like his corpse, essentially.
Right. Yeah, that was freaky. Damn, dude.
That was freaky as hell.
Yeah, dude. I loved it. Oof. Yeah, it caught me a little bit, too. I was like, oh, damn.
That was good.
But, yeah, no, it's pretty good. I'm excited for Friday's episode. It should continue to just get better from here now that we've sort of opened the box and it's not just some weird 50s sitcom.
Right, yeah. I think they're going to kind of go back to like this, like the show format these next like episode and a half. And then like the real like cliffhanger ending is going to come in the last episode.
Yeah, we'll see. I wish though that Disney with these live action shows would do more than 8 episodes. 8 episodes feels really short. Even like The Mandalorian was the same. Like,
mm-hmm. But The Mandalorian was like, that was longer than 30 minutes though. Wasn't it?
They vary, right? Like that's the other thing. Like the length of these episodes are like all over the place. Mm-hmm. But yeah, The Mandalorian would vary between like 35, 36 minutes, and sometimes as upwards as like I think there was one episode that was like 52 minutes in the last season. So they vary like greatly episode to episode.
Right on. Yeah, but, they're talking about like a cameo. Likes of what was on the last episode of The Mandalorian for WandaVision. And my prediction is her brother.
But didn't he die in the movies?
Well, he did, but didn't Vision?
Yeah, but clearly Vision's not alive in the show. Clearly Vision is recreated. Oh, shoot. Maybe I'm spoiling it. But they've said that this... No, well, okay, maybe I am, but if you're reading anything... Marvel has said that the show is set after the events of the mainline movies. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean we'll
unless
see.
There's some kind of reincarnation magic trick, I think it's pretty obvious that Vision is a vision, so to speak, of Wanda's.
Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know. Like in some of the trailers, you see Vision trying to escape that field. So we'll see what happens when he does.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I mean, I guess I miss those trailers. I try to avoid trailers so much, mm-hmm. you know, because sometimes I want to just not have preconceived ideas of what's going to happen. I just like to consume the show.
Right on.
All right, before we move into video games, you got anything else for this week?
I read up on something I had no idea. So, do you like figs?
Like the jelly cookies?
Yeah, but the fruit.
Oh.
I mean they're going to be in Fig Newtons. Do you like Fig Newtons?
I'm a little indifferent, and I actually don't even think I've really ever eaten a fig, just the fruit itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I found out how they become a fruit, really, is normally bees pollinate stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was reading up, wasps actually do that job for figs. And what they do is, essentially, they'll put their egg inside the fig, and the larva, whatever, hatches, whatever, leaves the fig, and you're essentially just eating wasp's eggs inside the fig.
That's, well, I'm even more glad that I've not eaten a fig.
I could be completely wrong, but what I read, yeah, I was like, you know, there's a reason I did not like the look of Fig Newton.
Yeah, that sounds really, that's, I'm a pass on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same here.
All right, then. Well, on that note, let's move on to video games, because you know what? Each and every week, we get together to channel our virtues through the Triforce to provide you all the latest news and general thoughts from the mythical world of video games. We are new and doing this entirely of our own entertainment, simply because we love video games. If you like what you hear, please consider leaving us a like and a review on your podcasting app of choice. And if you really enjoy it, consider sharing on social media and the like to your friends. You can find us on Twitter at TriCast Gaming P1 and on Facebook at TriCast Gaming Podcast. If you DM us on Twitter or Facebook with your questions, comments, concerns, thoughts, or ideas, we would be happy to read them on this show. Mike, this is episode 29. I'm starting to wonder when I can't say we are new and doing this entirely of our own entertainment. I mean,
I would say after episode 50.
After 50?
So that's what I'm going to put that there. Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, 52 would be a year.
Oh, that's true. So let's just do it after, like, yeah, let's after 52, we take out the new part.
All right. I like it. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, because we're over 6 months now. 26 would have been 6 months. So we're in the second half of the year, and it's awesome. We haven't missed a week yet. I'm not loving it.
Yeah.
And I don't plan on missing a week if we can ever possibly help it. So.
Right.
All right. Moving into corrections, I didn't really have any corrections. There was some stuff I stumbled on the show. I did a little bit of light research, and I couldn't really find any answers, like how many Xbox Live Gold subscribers there are and stuff. Mm-hmm. I couldn't really find an answer, so I don't really have any corrections for last week's show. Mike, do you?
I do not. Well, I mean, the part where I talked about the Bitcoin, some of that was sprinkled with inaccurate descriptions, so just go do your own research.
Yes. please don't take your advice on Bitcoin and Dogecoin from this podcast.
Don't do that. It's a bad idea. It's horrible.
Horrible. All right. Let's get into what we are playing. And boy, do I have a thumper for you guys and gals tonight.
Thump me, Philip.
Guess what?
What happened?
I am fucking finished Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I did it.
It happened the way I thought it was going to happen, right?
It did. I was playing along, and there was a scene. I did a thing, and there was a scene, and I'm back in the world, and I still had some quests to do. And I did them, and no other scenes happened. So I did some more stuff, and still no more scenes, and suddenly I had nothing left on the map. I'd cleared literally everything. No more quests popped up. And I was like, I never saw any credits. So I started Googling around. It turns out this is something that Assassin's Creed started with Origins, which was two games back, where they're not playing credits after like the end of the main story quest line. So I had no idea for like an hour or two, or maybe a little more, that I had actually finished the main story.
Wow.
Go ahead.
That's like one thing like I've like had the issue with. Like I need like some type of closure when I finish a game. You know what I mean? Like I need to know, okay, this is it. This is the end. You know what I mean?
Right. Because
I need that. Like, okay, this is the end marker. You're done. Okay. Now you can go do the other like side stuff if you want to clean up your map a little bit. But yeah, I need credits. The game does not give them to me.
I'm with you. And look, you know, I'm going to go ahead and put a spoiler warning ahead of this conversation. If you haven't played Valhalla and you still want to hold the story near and dear to your heart, I'm going to spoil the shit out of it for the next, 5 minutes probably, okay? Because I've put 120 hours into this game. I'm going to say everything I got to say. But it's, you know, the game's been out for a couple months now, a little more than a couple months now. So anyway, I think it's past, you know, Mike's not going to play the game, so I'm going to go ahead and give you my thoughts. But it ends in a manner that you're kind of like, oh, like, it's not really a cliffhanger, but it's also a little bit weird. Like, and then you go back into the Animus, and you're like, okay, like, is there... Like, that surely wasn't the ending, right? Like, it just... There's stuff about that scene. Like, you basically... you find this ancient race machine in Valhalla, or in, like, the Norse area.
Right.
As Eivor. And you get attacked by... So, it turns out I was right in that Eivor is, like, the reincarnation of Havi or Odin, and Sigurd was the reincarnation of Tyr, and then the assassin guy who you know you thought was on your side during the game, Basim, who just disappears halfway through the game. It turns out he is in fact the reincarnation of Loki. He attacks you at this machine, and you get into this fight with Basim reincarnated as or Loki reincarnated as Basim, and you defeat him. And you stick them into the machine, and you're like, "All is great, you know, like we did it, we saved the world." And then, like your character in the modern day world gets out of the Animus, and they're like, "We know what we need to do now to save the world, because the world is like in modern day times is like slowly, there's like this solar flare, and there's like a machine that's protecting the world." From the solar flare, but it's like working too hard or something, and the world is kind of, I don't know. They don't do a great job of explaining that. I have a feeling that that's been kind of brewing over a couple games, and because I just jumped in here, I don't really know what's going on with that part of it. Right. So anyway, you get out of the Animus, and she's like, "I know what to do now. Like, we need to go to this ancient god site." So you go to this site with this trident staff that supposedly has like these amazing healing properties. And, like, when you go to the site, like, you walk into it, and, like, there's Basim still, like, stuck in this machine up there, right?
Wow.
And you go into this machine as well now as the modern-day person, just like you did back in the Valhalla times. And mm-hmm. while you're in there, Basim comes to you, and you basically get tricked as your modern-day character to stay in this machine. And the Basim character gets himself out of the machine and lands on the trident. And the trident basically brings him back to life. And now the Basim character is alive in real life. And your modern day character, Layla, is now plugged into the machine permanently and has no way of getting out. And so the Basim character goes and finds your friends and basically... I don't know how the friends don't, like, if they're seeing everything that's happening in the machine, surely they would have known that Layla fought Basim. So that whole bit was not well explained. Like mm-hmm. how they're like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna trust you." Because they would have seen, like, through Layla's eyes, like how Eivor fought Basim and stuff. So I'm really confused by that part of it. Mm-hmm. As to why they're suddenly like agreeing to work with him, but they do, and they go off to find somebody else. And as Basim, you get back into the Animus, and then you continue playing the game, like inside the Valhalla era as Eivor, controlled by Basim in the Animus, 1,000 years later.
Wow!
But like the way it's all like shown to you, and like you get back into it, and you haven't finished defeating the Order and stuff like that. There's still like a little quest line left. Like, it just didn't feel like that was the end, but it was. It was, in fact, the end of the game.
Wow. Do you think if you would have played the previous games, you would have kind of recognized that that was, like, the end of that game, of that story?
I think I would have known that, like, oh, that was the main quest line, and I finished it.
Yeah.
So... I guess I would just, I didn't realize like they weren't entwining the, you know, like the past games, like your taking down of the Templars and their thing was all entwined in the main story. But in this game, it's kind of like a side thing to it all.
But right.
But there are other pieces that were really disappointing. Like, throughout the whole game, there's all this buildup of, like, you're going to betray your brother. You're going to betray your... There's this great betrayal. And you get to the end of the game, and there's no betrayal. Like, the betrayal is just that I romanced his wife while they were still married. That was it. That was the betrayal. Wow. Like, and like, we were still like friends. He like comes back at the end of the game, comes back to the village. We're friends. He's all happy. He's like zenned out. And now I'm the Jarl. Like, so now I'm the like leader of the clan. He abdicated his position. And it, like, it's all like a perfect happy ending. No betrayal, no nothing. I'm like, why was there all this stuff about a betrayal all the way up through the game? Makes no sense. And then like, you chase down this order. All these order members, like, there's 45 of them that you have to assassinate. And you find all these codex pages about the ancient assassins and everything. And you turn all this in, and the guy's like, oh, wow, cool. Thanks. That's great. Here's a piece of gear. And you're like, that's it? All of that effort, and I get a piece of gear. That's okay.
And an achievement? Or a trophy?
Yeah, I think there was a trophy associated with it, too.
Right on. Well, it wasn't that bad.
At least there was a trophy, I guess. But yeah, so I checked my save at the end. I was 119 hours and 36 minutes or something like that.
Oh, my God.
And I 100% all the areas. I finished every like side quest and collectible and everything. Right. And I actually looked. I have 8 trophies left. And I've been kind of looking at what I'd have to do to get them, and I think that I probably will pick off one or two a week for the next, you know, 4 to 6 weeks and eventually get that platinum. I think I'm that close. I think I probably, in less than 2 hours, probably hour and a half, maybe a little more, could get all the rest of the trophies.
Sweet, dude.
So that's my Valhalla adventure spoiling over of Valhalla.
I'm going to mark it on our show notes, the spoiler spots.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, all right. Yeah. So moving on from there, I finished that Sunday night, just before midnight. So I got it in as a January game. But before that, on Saturday night, Adam and I played Streets of Rage 4. So we started at like 9:15 and we finished shortly after. It was like 12:30. We streamed it all. So you can go onto Twitch. I really probably should make like a TriCast Gaming Twitch page, but I don't. So I have PBKini17. Yeah, I know. It's weird. Is my Twitch channel. Just because I didn't realize when I was signing up for Twitch like years ago just to watch somebody's channel. I thought I was just picking a username to log in, but that's like your channel name. So I'm going to have to
create something new. It's just like your name in our little recording here is TriCast Gaming Podcast.
Right. Yeah. So whatever. But if you go to my Twitch channel or if you go to Southtown Pro, Adam's Twitch channel, you can see we streamed the entire game. It took us 3 hours and 15 minutes to play through the entire game. We streamed the whole thing, so you can go check that out if you'd like. But yeah, we played through it all in one night. Unfortunately, you couldn't be there with us, Mike. I really wish you could have been. Yeah. I thought Streets of Rage 4 was a great game. It's a beat-em-up, side-scrolling beat-em-up game, very similar to like Battletoads, the new Battletoads game. It's got a fantastic soundtrack. I really like the sort of like 90s vibe soundtrack that it's got going on. Nice. It's got really cool visuals, some neat little enemy designs. The combat works really well. You can kind of mix in combos. If you use your heavy attack, it actually takes health, but it takes health in like chunks. And like, if you can like defeat an enemy, you can get some of that back. But then if you take a hit in the middle of your combo, then you just lose all that health. So like, you have to play this balance of like, do I use my light attacks or do I use my heavy attacks? There's some dodging that you can do. You can kind of jump up and down between. There's basically like three or four lanes in the screen that you can kind of move up and down through to kind of avoid attacks. You can like do jump kicks and go into combos that way. There's 4 different characters, and each one plays very differently, for sure. And they have each character has like a super move that you have like throughout the level, you can gain stars. So usually we'd have at most like three of the, because you start the level with only one star and you can collect other stars throughout the level. So at most you'd have like maybe three of these super moves that you can do. And they looked really cool. Each one was like unique between the different characters. Some really neat boss designs. Some of them were really challenging. And I hate to say this, but like Adam was like, he was okay. He was okay. I was definitely better. I'm just going to put it out there. I was definitely better at the game. And he kept dying before we would get to some of the bosses. And so there was multiple bosses, if you watch this playthrough, that I soloed. And it was very challenging in some places, particularly the last boss, because the last boss fight has like multiple segments. And I actually couldn't. I nearly got to the end of it all by myself, but we finally had to break down and like do some of the. At the end of the level, you can sacrifice your score for like extra lives and stuff. And so we did that on the final boss, and Adam was able to actually get to the final boss without dying. and we did finally beat it. But overall, just fantastic. And it's 3 hours and 15 minutes, play through the whole game. I loved it. I've rated it right up there with Battletoads in terms of like just this really fun, you know, really short, you know, one-off experience with good visuals, good soundtrack, good level design, neat enemies. Great. I really loved it. You know, probably a solid eight out of 10 game, you know, for what the genre that it's in. So, Streets of Rage 4, it's on Xbox Game Pass. It's only a 3-hour experience. You can play it with your friends up to, I think, 4-player co-op. I definitely recommend it.
I may have to try that with Tyler one of these nights.
You should definitely do it. I recommend it. All right. And then, man, it just keeps going. I told you guys I've been playing Super Mario Galaxy, trying to get all 120 stars. Well, I have done it. I got all 120 stars. It opens up a final secret level at the end, and there's a star at the end of that. So 121 total stars. I did it. Full on, completed, absolutely 100% Super Mario Galaxy. What a great 3D Mario game. It's just really awesome. It controls well. The levels are designed really well. It suffers from, because it was a Wii era game, so it suffers from some of the gimmicks. Like it had some like gyroscope levels and some touchscreen levels that are not really fun. But, you know, they're few and far between, and the rest of it is just, it's just so good. So much better than Super Mario Sunshine. I mean, it's like night and freaking day. Like, I would put Galaxy up there alongside Super Mario 64 for me. Both of those, actually, I think, for me, a little bit over Odyssey. I actually think Super Mario Odyssey is, I mean, it's a fantastic 3D Mario game, but it's just not, I think it's not the best. I think they try to put too much into it. I'm sure Adam would disagree, and he's not here to defend it, but for me, it's right up there. It is a fantastic game, and I really wished Mario Galaxy 2 was on the Switch. Really disappointed they didn't do that. But yeah, that's three games. I can report now. Three games in 2021. I'm finally off the blocks. I'm feeling good now. Feeling nice. Good.
But so you're going to count Mario Galaxy as a game?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd started it in December of last year. I'd gotten like 30, 40 of the stars.
Oh, okay.
The vast majority of it I've done since the new year started.
Okay. I thought for some reason you started this way earlier than that.
No.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I've definitely put more time in it in 2021 than I did in 2020.
Right on. Put it on the list.
And certainly, you know, I 100% the game, so I feel like it should count. I did, though, going back to Valhalla just very briefly, because when there was no credits, I messaged our group chat and was like, hey, there's no credits in this game. Like, does that mean it doesn't count? And Adam's like, no, that was your rule. It doesn't count. I was like, yeah. I will kill somebody. I will. I'll do it.
It counts. Dude, it counts. Like, I think if we can match up two of the criteria minimum, it should count.
Yeah, I mean, what I told Adam was, I was like, the whole point of, like, the saying, like, you must see credits is just so that people don't get, like, 20 hours into a 40-hour game and be like, oh, well, like, I just got tired of it. But I played 20 hours, so it counts. Like,
right. No, you got to complete. You got to get the story finished.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, the fact that I put 120 hours and completed literally every 100% every area.
Right. Because any normal game would put credits in their goddamn game.
Apparently, you can access them through the main menu.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, so whatever. No. All right, well, I've got another game that I started, but I haven't got too far into it, so I'm going to save some impressions for next week, and I'm going to flip it over to you. What have you been playing?
They added some stuff in Destiny 2, like a little side mission for the Crow, so I went and did that, which was pretty fun. Knocked that out, and then kind of started an exotic quest, and then my game crashed. I'm like, I don't feel like booting this up. I'm going to go play Rocket League. So I have a Rocket League 1v1 tournament coming up, so I'm like kind of going through fundamentals, learning how to hit the ball again and get the ball. Like, the main thing for me, like, on how I'm, like, I feel like I succeed in 1v1 for the most part is I can get the ball behind the car, my opponent, and have them have to do a 180, and I can already just beat them to the ball and get it to the goal. Like, I don't do anything special. I just capitalize on mistakes. It's like 90% of my strategy.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's pretty much what I do. That, and I just have to learn how to hit the ball square, and like kind of like figure out how to like hit the ball to where it goes where I want it to go. Like, I'm tired of just hitting the ball just to hit the ball. Especially like on clears, like I'm trying to like be aware of like the situation of like where the cars are, and just trying to like find a way to hit it around the cars or kind of like bounce it under or get it over them. So I'm like working on my octane car and how to like figure out how to like really get a rhythm on like hitting the ball exactly how I want to hit it with purpose as opposed to just hitting it with power. So
yeah, 100%. Like, that's what I mean, I've been working on that for months, and like it's led to mistakes obviously in the game, and Tyler's always like, you need to think less. I'm like, it's like I'm starting to get like a little bit annoyed. I'm like, I think you need to be thinking about what you're doing. You need to be a little more purposeful in this game, you know. So I'm making mistakes because I'm thinking about where people are and how I can try to clear the ball.
Right.
But once it becomes more instinctive, the mistakes will start to hopefully clear out. But
and you won't like hesitate either. Like, when you're like, it becomes like just second nature. Like, it'll just happen.
Right.
You don't have to think about it. You're just going to make it happen.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I'm trying to work on it. Like, I go against bots just to kind of, like, hardcore, like, the All-Star ranked bots. And, like, I just don't try to score. I just try to hit the ball around them. And so I'm trying to get it to where I don't have to think about it. I just know how to get my car positioned correctly and go from there.
Right.
But I have plenty of time on my hands, so I can do that.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I mean, we've been playing a lot of Rocket League too. I love Rocket League. In fact, you know, I mean, if we finish at a decent time, if people want to play a few matches, I'll be down tonight, as always. But
for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great game, man. I don't know. Like, we talk about it so much, but I love it. It's such a cool game.
It's just simple. It's kind of mindless at times for me. Like, that's why, like, you catch me, like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just, like, enjoying it. Like, I'm just, like, in my nothing zone. Like, I, like, have been thinking all day at work. And, like, this is my game to, like, just hit the ball, put it in the goal. You know what I mean? And so, like, there are times when, like, I'm just, like, in my nothing box is what my wife likes to call it. And I do that when I'm playing Rocket League. And sometimes I, like, kind of, like, banter a bit with you guys and do y'all shit, just stupid stuff. But, yeah, for, like, when I first start playing, like, I just, I'm in, like, I'm just in the zone to where I'm having fun without saying anything.
Yeah, dude, I know what you mean about nothing boxes, though. Like, I definitely can be that way sometimes. Yeah. And my wife thinks that I'm, like, annoyed at her, and I'm like, I just, like, you don't understand. Like, my brain has been turned on all day.
Yeah.
And to, like, try to keep it on at this point in time is... And then she'd be like, but you can go and talk to your friends while you play video game. I'm like, yeah, but we're not talking about anything. And I don't have to focus on anything that they're saying. Like,
right.
We're literally talking about how I hit your butt.
Right.
Your fat butt. That's the extent of our conversation.
It's banter about nothing and butts and balls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man. Awesome. On Destiny 2, I noticed that there's a new season about to start. Like, are you going to try to play that? Or?
Oh, 100% for sure. They're going to add in the old strikes. The one where the servitors at the end. What was that? House of Devil Strike.
Yeah.
And then that one where they have that huge-ass shank. They added that one back in.
Oh, okay.
And they're adding another PvE thing. I'm not sure exactly what it is.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. And then Vogue is going back the season after. And also the season after, they're going to bring crossplay, dude. So,
oh, about time. Maybe that'll get us playing again. Because that
y'all can run the freaking, you and your dad and everybody, we can run the raid.
That'd be awesome.
And we can, like, it's easy for us to run the raid in our current clan, man. So, like, just pick a time and I'll get the guys I know in our clan and people knock it out. It's like the raid isn't as hard as like I think this raid is a lot easier than the previous raid and the first raid that we did.
Gotcha.
It's fun. It's not like just grindy. It's a good time.
Yeah, I haven't actually gotten to experience the latest raid at all, so that'd be awesome. I'd be definitely up for that.
Yeah, like I said, just pick a time with you and your dad, and we'll show your dad what a raid is all about.
Yeah, he hasn't seen any of the raids yet, so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, I think it's time to move into topics of the show. What do you think?
Let's move on.
All right, so we're going to kick it off with our first topic. The PlayStation Quarterly Financial News is out. So last week we did Xbox. This week we've got PlayStation. Next week I'm going to see if I can find Nintendo's stuff. I might have to do a little bit of digging, but I'm going to see if I can find Nintendo's results, and then we can have evaluated all three companies across these 3 weeks. But let's focus on PlayStation this week, and there's some interesting tidbits. I'm going to read the highlights, and then I'm just going to spit it over to you, Mike, for, you know, any thoughts or anything that you picked out that you really want to talk about. But let's get the highlights of this news first. So, leading off, Sony is now forecasting its highest ever profit for the fiscal year ending in March. So obviously these quarterly results are for Q3 of 2020, which ended in December. And I've told you guys this before, I'll reiterate it again, video game companies run their fiscal years, their financial years, from April through the following March. So 2020 fiscal year will be April 2020 through March 2021. So these quarterly results are for up through December, but they're projecting out to the end of the year, and they're saying that they believe they'll have their highest ever profit with $10 billion at the end of the fiscal year 2020, and only $1.06 billion of that will be from electronic sales. So this is Sony in total. Electronic sales, you know, their TVs and all that kind of stuff. So that means that 90% of their profit for this year is from their entertainment industry, music, anime, gaming. So that's really interesting that, you know, the more Sony leans into that aspect of it, the more money they're making and they're growing as a company. And this is, you know, we talked about how they went and bought, what's that anime streaming service?
Crunchyroll,
yeah. So we talked about how they went and bought that and things like that. So you can see why they're doing that. You can see how much money they're making from that part of the industry. Now, if we break it down to what we're really interested in, which is PlayStation and this quarterly result. So Sony achieved its best ever quarterly earnings report across the gaming industry, earning $8.43 billion. Now, that's what they earned. So one was their profit that they expect to make across all their division at the end of the year. So this is just money earned, you know, the difference between like what your profit is versus the revenue that you brought in, because, you know, it balances out with, you know, costs and everything. So $8.43 billion for this quarter in the gaming industry, which is a 40% increase year on year. So massive increase for Sony. Now, I don't know what that is across, you know, across years, because obviously this year, this quarter, is the PlayStation 5 launch. So speaking of PlayStation 5, they announced their number of units sold. Remember, we talked about this last week. So Sony has shipped 4.5 million PS5. So that's actually quite a bit more than what I thought they were at last week when we talked about it. So 4.5 million PS5s have been shipped to retailers and customers since launch. That's a pretty awesome number. It matches their PS4 launch number. So, you know, it's not like greatly exceeding it, but it's at least matching the PS4 sales from 2013. So that's good news. That means that PlayStation is healthy even in a pandemic year. So,
right, and I think they probably would have sold more if they could get more made. You know what I mean? Like, I think they're just kind of there's a choke point in like just with the pandemic, people actually be able to get to the factory and go to work. I think. I think it could be higher than that.
The whole year. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see once they're like in stock, and they can, you know, no longer is stock the limiting sales factor. We can really see how many of these units they'll sell. I mean, I read another article saying that Xbox have sold every unit they manufactured so far.
Wow.
So, you know, again, like, I don't think that that's indicative that they've sold more than Sony. I think that they literally did plan for less units sold than Sony. But they've sold everything that they have, too, in terms of stock. So, very interesting launch. Moving on to the next big highlight point, they sold 18.4 million copies of first-party games in this quarter. So that's their total sales across all their first-party franchises for this quarter. Of that 18.4, 4.1 million of those were Spider-Man Miles Morales. But I think that there's something to peel out of this, and I was kind of talking about this last week in terms of how exclusives aren't really the console sales or console drivers. So you think about the fact that Miles Morales was a $50 game, so it wasn't even a full-price game. It was cross-plat. It launched on PS4 and PS5. So that means that you have 110 million PS4s out there, plus apparently 4.5 million PS5s, and your total Miles Morales sales is 4.1 million copies.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, 4.1 is great sales. I mean, there's plenty of games that would just kill for that many copies sold.
Right.
But the point I'm trying to make is that, like, if I was seeing an attach rate of like 30-40% on Sony exclusive games or higher, I'd be like, yeah, I bet exclusives are like 100%, like the sales driver of people going to PlayStation over Xbox. But the fact that you're looking at that's a sub 10%, you know, that's even like a sub 5% attach rate.
Right.
You can't tell me that. And Miles Morales is a fantastic game. If you have a PlayStation and you haven't played Miles Morales, like, you really should go check it out. So you can't try to claim to me that's why people are buying PlayStations over Xbox. There's more to it than just exclusives.
So you're saying it's just the brand itself and like loyalty to the brand? Is that what you're implying, or?
I mean, I think that there's a lot of factors to it. I think that, I think it'd be a longer show to dive into this. I guess, you know, I don't want to get too far off topic, but I just think that you hear a lot of people like, and you hear it a lot from the hardcore of like, oh, you know, Xbox has no games, you know, like Sony's exclusives are so great, yada, yada, yada. Like, but I don't think that that's what is driving most people to get a PlayStation over an Xbox. I genuinely think, and this is what kind of really annoys me, well, not really anymore, I've kind of gotten over it, but in the 2013-2014 time period and the 2012, even just before the consoles launched, you know, there was that whole idea of like Xbox is the bro console, you know, they've got the deals with Call of Duty and they've got Gears and Halo, like that's the bro console, like it's just the gamer dudes playing those, right?
Yeah.
But in this generation, like almost immediately, like with the launch of the consoles, PlayStation took those over. PlayStation had the deals with Destiny. They had the deals with Call of Duty. And they're all over big commercials everywhere. They got marketing deals on the biggest selling games. And when you have that, you're going to sell more consoles. I mean, just flat out, you are. Because if you're marketing to the people, like, what's the highest selling game every year for the last 10 years? Call of Duty. Call of Duty. Every year, the Call of Duty release for that year is the highest selling game for that year. And it reaches like 20 million plus copies. Right. So, like, if you're all over marketing, like, everywhere you see Call of Duty, you see the PlayStation symbol. And DLC or expansion packs or whatever for Call of Duty come to PlayStation first, and you have exclusive zombie modes on PlayStation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think of any one single thing, that sells consoles far more than anything right. else.
I kind of like want. I'm curious now. Like, if we go and do a survey of like people who are not gamers, and we ask them name a gaming console, I honestly believe they will say PlayStation, just because, like you're saying, like their name and their logo are pretty much everywhere and synonymous with video games. I'm not saying that Xbox isn't. I just feel like PlayStation is like great at just putting their product in your face whenever they possibly can.
Yep, I'm right there with you, and I don't blame Play. I mean, like, it's brilliant from PlayStation. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm not hating on them at all for it. I'm just counterpointing anybody that says it's exclusives. That's why PlayStation sells more, because of the exclusives. Bullshit.
Right.
It has sold consoles for a very small, like, probably like maybe 5 to 10% of people bought PlayStations over Xbox. Right. Purely because of exclusives. Mm-hmm. The rest are... You know, it was more powerful at launch. The PS4 over the Xbox One was more powerful. And then because they put out such a solid product with the PS4, because it was such a great machine and it did so many things so well, that like when it came time for the new console to come out, you know, I think people are already going to be like they're going to want to see something above and beyond from Xbox for them to want to go, well, I'm going to jump over to Xbox from PS4 now. Mm-hmm. So, and then finally, the last little point, last main highlight point was they noted their number of active PSN users at 114 million active PSN users. So this is people that have an active PlayStation Network account. Mm-hmm. And then they actually gave a number for their PS Plus subscribers at 47.4 million PS Plus subscribers. So they're at... roughly 45%, somewhere in there, of their total number of accounts are converted to paid plus accounts. So that's pretty good numbers. I thought that I had seen that Xbox Live Gold at some point had somewhere in the 50 million range, but maybe it's actually less than that. I don't know. What is interesting, though, is part of the earnings call that we talked about last week with Xbox was that Xbox were saying that they had finally broken 100 million active Xbox Live accounts. So if you think about how many more consoles PlayStation has sold than Xbox, but when you look at their active engagement, the people that have accounts with each service, they're neck and neck, 114 million to a little over 100 million on the Xbox side. So clearly, Xbox are a big gaming brand. They're... You know, moving to PC and mobiles with the xCloud, that's working for them. That's getting them alongside PlayStation in terms of total volume. Just because it's not console to console, I think that we should give Microsoft some credit in that they evolved and realized that they can offer something across all of these platforms, and they can get the same engagement.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think it's also interesting that, you know, Game Pass has 18 million paid subscribers and PlayStation Plus has 47 million. So you're looking at a number that's, you know, around 35 to 40%. But obviously, you know, Jason said on the show before, Game Pass hasn't populated out to the PC crowd as much yet. Mm-hmm. But it is. I mean, it is starting to. I mean, they had 3 million additional subscribers from Q2 to Q3 last year. So Game Pass is growing. It's growing heavy, and we'll have to keep watching and see how that goes for them.
Yeah, it's only going to get it'll get better once they add, like, when Elder Scrolls comes out, like those bigger, meatier games come out. Like, people are like, oh, shit, I can get this. I can get all these games through the subscription. And that'll, like, I think that should, that might actually bump up their numbers a bit more as well. I don't think they have the those really big games to draw in, like, from PlayStation users.
Yeah, they definitely need some big hitters in Game Pass. Halo Infinite seemingly will be the first one of those towards the end of the year.
Because the only thing they really have on there is Gears, right? Like, that's a really good big AAA game.
Yeah. Gears and Forza Horizon.
Forza, yep.
And Forza Horizon is fantastic, fantastic game. It really is. It's exceptional. And it scores well because of it. But yeah, I mean, comparative to like The Last of Us and Ghost of Tsushima and Horizon Zero Dawn and Spider-Man and God of War, you know, Death Stranding, although that's gone to PC and it wasn't really first party. Days Gone, you know, there's just, you know, Ratchet and Clank, like there's just so much over there. So
yeah, and like that's funny because like getting a PlayStation, the reason I'm getting a PlayStation is for the exclusives.
Right,
but I'm not the majority though, so.
Right. Well, and because you have a main gaming platform already, and that's your PC. Like, yeah. You're not looking to buy a main gaming platform. You're looking to buy something supplemental.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And your main platform already has Game Pass. It already has access to all the Xbox stuff.
Yeah.
So
exactly. I think that also might be a big contributor to like why they have more sales, if you really think about it. Because like, I don't need an Xbox if I have Game Pass on the computer. So, like, well, I'm going to get a PlayStation. So that could be another factor in why their sales are like that.
Yeah, I mean, is that a good or bad thing for Microsoft is the question. I think that's the debate that is to be had.
Only time will tell.
Yeah, only time will tell. I mean, their quarterly earnings from last week suggested that they had broken $5 billion in revenue for that quarter in their gaming division. So you're looking at $8.4 billion for PlayStation and $5 billion for Microsoft for Xbox. So, you know, they've got a gap there definitely to make up. But, you know, 114 million active PSN subscribers are users versus 100 million Xbox Live users. So there's engagement there. And if they can just bring up Game Pass subscribers and things like that, I think that you'll start to see that gap close. Especially as if they could get onto iOS. The fact that xCloud is only on Android still, if they could get over to iOS, I think that'll be another boon for them.
Oh, for sure.
So, all right, I'll flip it over to you now. I mean, is there anything that you pulled out of all of this that you wanted to highlight?
I was looking at that that PDF he sent on the show notes. And I just had one small thing. What are the games that Sony have on mobile?
Where do you see it's, mobile games?
Let me see. It was like under music. Where was it? I think it's...
Oh, it was under music? I didn't even actually look at music. The music
section. Yeah. I had it highlighted and I closed the freaking... Where'd it go?
Oh, I see. Mobile gaming.
Yeah, it didn't start till recently, as far as the numbers be reported. Yeah,
Q1 of fiscal year 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like brand new for them. I don't know. Sony published mobile games?
Is it mainly tied to their phone, the Xperia?
Sony published mobile games. Yeah, do they have a phone now?
Have they always had a Sony? I don't know. Okay. Sony Xperia Play is what comes up when I type in Sony Mobile Gaming. I think it might just be hardware. It might not be games itself. It just might just be there. Because it's a phone. It's like a phone, but there's like, you flick it up and there's like a controller under it. Oh no, this is a used one that I'm looking at. I don't know, man. I was just curious if you knew anything about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have to look into this. I guess incoming... corrections next week, I will do some digging into mobile gaming for PlayStation. or for Sony. It's weird that they don't group that under their gaming division, that they group
it
under
their
music segment.
Music.
That's
weird. I wonder what the reasoning is.
So, yeah, that's strange.
Yep, yep.
Anything else? I mean, I personally like the fact that they have numbers so plain. Like, that'd be great if Microsoft could be that open.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
You can see that sales for the PlayStation 4 has continued to... Well, it's actually kind of holding firm. If you look at Q4 of 19, so that would have been the first 3 months of 2020. So January, February, mm-hmm. March of 2020, they sold 1.4 million PlayStation 4 consoles. And then over the next 3 months, they sold 1.9. And then the next 3 months, 1.5. And then the final 3 months of last year, 1.4. So they basically are running 3 month average of like 1.5, 1.6 million consoles sold, right, on average across each 3 month segment of last year. So it's kind of steady, and it's actually kind of strange that they still sold 1.4 million PS4s, last fall, alongside the fact that they just launched the PlayStation 5.
Right. I think it's probably like mistakes of grandparents buying PlayStation. I got you the new PlayStation, honey. And it's,
or they're so cheap that people are now like, oh, I'll go grab one.
Yeah, probably. Yep.
So I think that's interesting. I mean, if you've got no more, no other things to pull out, I did have a couple things that I wanted to kind of point out.
Go for it.
So they break down... Under game software, they break things down between physical software, digital software, and add-on content. And they have some interesting little notes here. So next to physical software, this is revenue from first-party game software sold on discs to retailers. Okay? And then digital software is revenue from full game downloads of both first- and third-party titles sold via the PlayStation Store. So obviously they get a cut of every game sold on the PlayStation Store, even if it's not a Sony-published game. And then add-on content is revenue from purchases of digital content other than full game downloads, such as in-game currency, in-game items, and expansion packages. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this is in yen. I'd have to do a conversion from yen to dollars to give you a strong number. But so let's just go with yen, because number is number. In yen, for Q3 of 2020, which would have been October, November, December, they had 256 million yen worth of revenue from add-on content. If you combine digital and physical software, they only had 225 million yen. So add-on content by itself makes more money for them than all game sales combined, physical and digital.
Wow.
So if you think your Fortnite V-Bucks or whatever, your FIFA packs, your add-on content in Assassin's Creed Valhalla, your Rocket League stuff, like if you think any of that's going away anytime soon, you're absolutely crazy. Like, it's only going to get more, because that is the big revenue stream for these companies.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's all I can think of are the FIFA packs.
FIFA packs, man. Yep.
Yep.
So that's crazy. The second point that I wanted to bring out is they actually give a percentage of digital versus physical. Mm-hmm. So of their ratio right now for Q3, it's 53%, so slightly more than 50% of their games are sold digitally rather than physically. But what's interesting is that's actually been coming down. So in Q4 of 19, it was at 68%. It reached a high. So that would have been, again, so just a reminder, that would have been January, February, March of 2020. It reached a high of 74%. In Q1 of 20, so that would have been April, May, June, at the height of the pandemic, 74% of the games were sold digitally rather than physically. So that kind of makes sense, right? At the height of the the start of the COVID pandemic. But then it's dropped to 59% in Q2 and then 53% in Q3. So that's very interesting, I think, that, you know, once people are feeling like they can go to retail again, they are, and they're buying their games at retail. You saw a pretty heavy drop off. So I don't think digital is here to stay just quite yet. I thought those were interesting numbers to pull from.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the year before, I mean, they're right about 74% is way above what it was before that. Well, I mean, you have 68% there in the fourth quarter, but it looks like things are leveling off back to what they were before the pandemic. Because you can, like, there's a clear indicator where the pandemic started.
Right.
55 to 74. Q1 to 74. But still, it's just like, I think things will start leveling off again. I'm actually kind of surprised because I thought like a majority of sales were going to be digital, but I guess people like having that hard disk to just have as a collecting item, I guess.
I think there's still like for me, I still go to Walmart a lot. And the big reason is like, if you go to Walmart and you buy a brand new game, it's typically $50 instead of $60. Like when I went and bought Valhalla at launch, it was $50 instead of $60. Now, the few that I see that not happening with is like Sony first-party published games are typically not. But basically everything else, you can go and buy it day one at Walmart, and they have it knocked down. And I think that's probably intentional to keep them competitive in game sales.
No, probably. Is Target the same way, have you noticed?
I think they do. I think it's fairly similar. I don't think they do as much of a knockoff, but if you use your red card, it gets pretty close.
Wow. Okay.
So
I was religious about looking at video games in like Walmart and Target, but I don't really do it anymore just because like I have Game Pass. So like I never really been paying attention to the prices, but yeah, that's crazy that they're doing that. I mean, it's smart just because they keep the traffic in the store.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I still despite the fact that I can, it's still just hard to like, it's hard to go, like, I could buy this game for $50 or I could buy it for $60 and I'm just going to choose to pay a $10 convenience fee. Like, I'm already in Walmart. I've already got to go over there for another reason, so.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. All right, and then the final thing that I was going to point out of this is that they did give us monthly active users and they did give us PS Plus users, but they didn't give us PlayStation Now subscribers. So I think PlayStation Now as a service is still struggling for Sony. I think that's indicative of the fact that they're not giving us the monthly users for PlayStation Now just yet.
Right.
But you are seeing growth for PlayStation Plus. Q4 of last year it was at 41.5, and Q4 of this year it's at 47.4, so almost 6 million additional users. I think I saw another number that said something like 84% of all PS5 users are PlayStation Plus subscribers. But again, we're looking at the hardcore of the hardcore. Of course, most of the people that have gone and bought a PS5 also have PlayStation Plus. They're the hardcore of the hardcore. So.
Right.
All right, well, that's all I've got. I mean, we've talked a lot about PlayStation, so, but that's all I've got for them for this segment.
Right on.
All right, you ready to move on?
Let us move on.
All right, let's move on to number two, Big EA News Week. A lot of EA news this week. They also had their earnings call, and this is where a lot of this information came from. Let's go through the high-level stuff one by one. After each one of these, I'll kind of pause. If you've got something to add, jump in. Feel free to jump in and add what you've got. So, number one, EA appears to be very happy to have partnered with Xbox Game Pass, stating that EA Play's services inclusion into Xbox Game Pass Ultimate has increased its total subscribers to 13 million. So they're saying that the advertisement benefit of being included with Game Pass is actually bringing more people over to EA Play services, and they're seeing a considerable bump in growth to the number of EA Play subscribers, up to 13 million total now.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Like, I mean, that's kind of like a no-brainer. Like, just if you have Game Pass, just sign up for it. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to get more games that way.
Yeah. I mean, I think the cool thing about it is that, again, you know, we're seeing where, you know, oh, they're included with Game Pass. So that's, you know, you don't have to separately subscribe to EA Play if you've already got Game Pass, but that it's still driving people into EA Play somehow. So, like, you know, people are maybe going into Game Pass and they're getting to the end of the month and they're like, I'm not really playing anything more in Game Pass, but it's like only $5 to have EA Play. And I got to try out all the stuff while I was in Game Pass and I like it. So I'm going to do EA Play now for $5, you know? So it's just neat to see that, that Game Pass is still, despite the fact that, you know, things are getting bundled into it, they're still driving revenue to other companies. Like I saw the Medium has already surpassed its development and advertising costs already. Wow. And the game's only been out 5 days and it's included in Xbox Game Pass, yet it's exceeded its development costs.
It's awesome.
So it's interesting that you see that, that sort of phenomenon happening. People said that, you know, Game Pass would kill things, but it doesn't seem like that's happening. All right, number two, EA announced, EA has announced $3 billion net profit from its Star Wars games across the last whatever number of years that they've had the license with Star Wars. So that's net profit. That's not revenue brought in. That's just pure profit that they've made on its Star Wars games, $3 billion. So that's really awesome. It shows that it was still very beneficial for them to have that. They also stated that they've sold over 52 million copies of their Star Wars games. So that's Star Wars Battlefront, Battlefront 2, Jedi Fallen Order, and Star Wars Squadrons put together over 52 million copies of between those four games. And they also pointed out that Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, which is their mobile game, is a $1 billion franchise on its own. So, again, we're seeing the mobile market having lots of money because there's lots of microtransactions
in the mobile market. Yes, sir.
So, any thoughts on that?
I am very impressed. I thought it'd be like way more than just four games. But no, I mean, you're right. It's only four games and $3 billion.
Net profit. So, like, their revenue is a lot more than that, but their profit.
Yeah. That's crazy. What are they going to do with that money?
I don't know. Maybe
what have they done with that money?
Continue to make us good games, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know.
Buy new studios? I don't know.
That'd be great. More games on Game Pass.
I did pull a quote from EA from the earnings call. It said, quote, "You should expect us to continue to invest in our Star Wars relationship. It's been very profitable to this point, over $3 billion in net bookings, and we're excited by what we'll be able to do in the future. But you shouldn't read this as necessarily us building the less titles." It's a weird way of saying what I think what they're saying is that, we've made a lot of money, so we're going to like slow down now because we've already made a lot of money. I think that they're trying to say that we're going to do the opposite. Like, we're going to continue to build on our Star Wars relationship and continue to make games, even though we've already made a tremendous amount of money from it.
Why stop?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, why stop? But I think this is sort of they having to get out and say this stuff because they no longer have an exclusive relationship anymore on the Star Wars stuff.
So, I mean, the games could get better if they're going to have competition for Star Wars games.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think that's exactly how I would read that. All right, the next item, they've announced the Mass Effect the Legendary Edition, and it will release May 14th of this year. So this is Mass Effect 1, Mass Effect 2, Mass Effect 3, and all the DLC across those three games bundled up into one awesome package with, up-resing of visuals. Apparently they've tweaked how the Mako drives in the first game and how the gunplay feels in the first game. So just a general enhancement package across those three games.
Yeah, I think it's another game for Connor to get his teeth into.
Connor's already
a new way to play Mass Effect.
He already plays like these three games like once or twice a year. But I think he's really excited about this. You know, I've seen some of the visual uprising for the games, and it looks really good. I think it's really going to benefit from this package. And I think that I'll definitely be getting it. I've played Mass Effect 2 and 3. I never actually played Mass Effect 1, so maybe this will be my first time to play Mass Effect 1.
Cool.
So that's exciting. And then next up, they announced that the next Battlefield game will be revealed this spring and is due to launch in fall of this year. They said, quote, "We'll reveal the game in the spring and deliver a defining Battlefield experience for our players in the 2021 holiday season. The game takes full advantage of the power of next-generation platforms to bring massive, immersive battles to life with more players than ever before. Featuring maps with unprecedented scale, the next edition of Battlefield takes all the destruction, player agency, vehicle, and weapon combat that the franchise is known for and elevates it to another level." Mike, are you excited about the next Battlefield?
I've only ever played two Battlefields, and one I got for free when I got the Xbox One.
Yeah, I've never been a massive Battlefield fan, but they did do the World War One game not that long ago. Battlefield 1 was the World War One game.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, Battlefield 5 was like World War II setting, and it was after it.
Oh, right.
But I really liked the Battlefield 1 campaign. And again, they're doing the same shit that Call of Duty did, where they're like, they've gone back to Battlefield 1, even though they had a Battlefield 1 before. Like, now it's fucking confusing. Whatever. Battlefield 1, the game that came out, you know, 3-4 years ago. Okay, not the one originally at the start of the series. I really enjoyed that campaign. I thought it was pretty good. You can play it right now if you have Game Pass with EA Play and Game Pass. You can download it. It's about a 5-hour campaign. I thought it was actually really good. The Battlefield 5 campaign I thought was pretty weak in comparison.
I stopped playing it.
Yeah. The Battlefield 1 campaign I actually enjoyed. We hadn't really ever seen like a World War One style game like that before, so I thought it was pretty neat.
Right.
Okay, and then final piece of news. They announced the return of college football. It will be called EA Sports College Football, so no longer NCAA. Not surprising. They're probably not officially licensing the NCAA and players and things like that. What I'm intrigued by, though, is will they actually have, like, the schools? And if it's not probably like the schools, then it could be weird. But they probably at least are gonna work out deals with individual schools, at least the big schools. But yeah, college football is coming back. We were big NCAA fans. We've talked about it on the show before, so this is a little bit exciting.
Yeah, I did the career thing, man. It was a blast.
It was always good times.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd just be interesting to see how they deal with all of the, because the whole reason it stopped was because of the commercial aspect of player likenesses and things like that.
Right, right.
So
we'll see. I'm gonna bet they just have like a university, like school, college feel, but they probably won't have actual colleges in the game, unless, I mean, I think if it was only a likeness thing, I mean, I could see them doing it, like getting deals with the colleges. But if that's not the case, then I don't know. Yeah,
they just can't have the Alabama running back that everyone knows is really good and go number one in the draft be like the best player in the game or something like that.
Right.
And look like that player, you know, like that's what they can't do.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, they didn't give us any other details on when it's coming or anything. They just announced that they are in development of a new college football game. So that's exciting.
Right.
Hopefully we'll know more this summer when they get around to their big reveal in the summer of what's to come.
Right.
All right, some other notes from their financial report that is interesting. Their net bookings, so that's their net profit for the trailing 12 months, is $6 billion, up 8% year over year. So across all their franchises for the previous 12 months, net profits of $6 billion for EA. That's fantastic. I mean, they're right there alongside of, well, not quite alongside of, but, you know, Microsoft was $5 billion for the quarter. PlayStation was $8 billion for the quarter, but that was total revenue. So we're talking about net profit across the 12 months. I mean, EA is right up there with them. So they've got some big franchises. Other interesting things, FIFA Ultimate Team had a record 6 million daily active players in December of this past year. So FIFA is just getting bigger for them. That's really interesting. Apex Legends had a 30% growth in new players year over year. So Apex Legends continues to get bigger for EA. And The Sims 4 Life to date has more than 33 million players and reached record daily, weekly, and monthly average players in December. So The Sims 4, and this is a game I totally forgot about. Like, to me, The Sims 4, like, it just doesn't exist. Right. Apparently, it is massive for them, and it's only getting bigger. So that's really interesting. And then the only other thing I wanted to pull out of this, again, if you look at their revenue from live services, okay, in millions of dollars, $951 million for the 3 months ending in December 31st, 2020. So they made $951 million in live services for the last quarter. Full game sales, $722 million. So again, the FIFA packs and shit are way outselling the full games. Yes. So, don't expect that stuff to taper off at all, ever. It's just going to get bigger.
Just so, part of the ecosystem now.
That's it.
Get used to it.
All right. Anything else before we move on?
Nope. I don't think I'm good. Let's move on.
All right. Finally, number three. Why don't you take number three? This was the one that you posted in our group chat. So why don't you address this one to the audience?
Yes. Embracer. Have you ever heard of them before? I have not.
Yeah. So they were THQ Nordic, and they rebranded as Embracer last year. So if you've heard of THQ Nordic, then maybe you know who Embracer Group is.
Yeah, that's what I saw too. But they recently acquired Gearbox, who makes Borderlands for, it says $1.3 billion, but I don't think that's 100% accurate. They didn't write him a check for $1.3 billion. I think from what I was like reading, I may have to go back and look. This may be a correction for next week, but I think they only technically played around 350 million and are going to eventually give stock and all that to equal $1.3 billion over the next several years to fully purchase the studio. But they also purchased other studios. I had my list here.
Here, before you jump into that, check the Google Doc real quick. About to put something in here. You can read that off if you want.
There it is. Yeah, Embracer will pay $188 million in cash and $170 million in newly used Embracer B shares. Okay, so it wasn't 300, it was 180. If Gearbox hits its targets operation for the next 6 years, it would also get a maximum of $1.01 billion of that amount. $360 million will be issued in Embracer B shares, and the remaining $655 million will be in cash. Okay, yeah, so it'll come out to be $1.3 billion. So it's just kind of a misleading headline there from what I was reading.
Yeah, and they have to hit their targets, and if they do, then at the end of 6 years from now, the total cash amount that Gearbox will get is around $840 million, and the rest of that $1.3 billion will be in shares.
Right. Yeah. So that's interesting. I'm kind of wondering, because they are also buying other studios. Here's a few. Coffee Stain North, which is the maker of the game that I like, Satisfactory.
Coffee Stain North, okay.
Yeah. Quantic Lab. I haven't heard of them. They're from out of Romania. This might be a reason I haven't heard of them. Snapshot Games, Flying Wild Hog, Purple Lamp Studios. 34. These are all smaller, like medium-sized games. They're not big, so they're trying to like get these smaller companies. And I'm just curious what their end game is. I mean, they may be looking to see what the market's doing in gaming. I'm like, wow, these games could make us money, so let's just buy them all up. So I'm curious to see what and how they manage this.
Yeah, so they've been buying studios for a while. So it used to be Nordic Games, and then it was THQ, and THQ went out of business. I can't remember what year it was, but they just flat went out of business. And then Nordic Games came back, and they bought the THQ trademark, and then they rebranded themselves to THQ Nordic, which is weird because THQ like just had gone out of business, but like 2 years later, this company, Nordic Games, bought the trademark and then renamed themselves after THQ and then started buying up all these studios. So their main, they bought main media groups like Koch Media, which is the ones that owned, Fish Labs and Flying Wild Hog and some other studios, War Horse Studios. And they've also bought Saber Interactive, people like 4A Games, New World Interactive, Snapshot Games, and then they've also got all the THQ stuff, the old THQ stuff, Black Forest Games, Bugbear Entertainment, Purple Lamp Studios falls under that. But they're the main company that owns the studios that do the Darksiders games. So all the Darksiders games falls under what is now Embracer Group, but under
Saints
the
Row.
Saints Row, that I'm drawing a blank. The SpongeBob remake that came out last year fell under this group. They've been buying studios for a while. Their previous big purchase was Saber Interactive, which was around $525 million, and that was last year, at the start of last year. So less than 12 months ago, they paid $525 million for Saber Interactive. So they're definitely they're pulling together a lot of these companies. I'm not really sure what the end game either is. It is kind of strange. They're kind of putting together a monopoly of all these like AA studios. In fact, I would say Gearbox is by far the biggest studio that they bought. By far the biggest studio.
Yeah.
Everything else was single A or double A, indie or double A studios up to this point.
I'm curious to see if they're going to make like a subscription thing like Xbox. I it's very unlikely, but I think it'd be cool, but we'll see what they do. I just don't see other reason just besides just making money to pull all these guys together and take some for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. It'll be interesting for sure. I mean, I don't know. They're making money though. They must be, otherwise they wouldn't have the money to pay for Gearbox.
I'm curious what their stock is doing right now. Let me Google that real quick.
Yeah, we just paid you in stock. It better be worth something.
Right. let me see. Stock.
So
$27.50 right now.
$27.50 a share?
Yep. It went up $3 today.
Oh, cool. I feel like I should find some video games companies to invest in a little bit. But I'd have to convince my wife to let me just take some of our money and put it in video game companies, which I don't know how she'll feel about that.
Dude, you get an allowance, just put your allowance in it.
Yeah, but I use that to buy video games to review on this podcast.
You can buy whole companies, Philip.
I don't know that I have that much. I remember hearing at one point last year that they said that they had something like 55 different games in active development across all their studios.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, so this is the thing, like, there's a list of, like, if you go into Wikipedia, there's a list of all their subsidiaries, but there's not a list of all the games that have been published under their title yet. Like, you'd have to go to all these different studios.
Right.
But, I mean, like
all these acquisitions are kind of, they're kind of recent, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Within the last few years.
Yeah.
Would definitely be, I mean, they've definitely been growing since, like, 2018, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So.
We'll see what they do.
Yep.
I'm going to see if I can try and invest in them.
But, I mean, some of the things that I find kind of interesting is just, like, for example, I read a report that said that, you know, them Gearbox being bought by this Embracer group wasn't going to affect 2K's publishing relationship for the Borderlands franchise. So that just gets even more strange. Like, how does all that shit work?
Right? Like, huh. What are they doing? What's going on?
So, you know, or like, so like in December of 2019, you know, Embracer Group purchased Tarsier Studios. Which Tarsier Studios is the developer behind Little Nightmares. Little Nightmares 2 is about to come out, but Little Nightmares 2 is published by Bandai Namco. So, like, I guess I don't really, Tarsier Studios is a subsidiary of Embracer Group, but their newest game that's about to come out in, like, a week is published by Bandai Namco.
So I wonder, like, if they're just going to let these contracts go up and then probably not renegotiate or something.
Yeah.
After it's gone.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of is that, you know, like you're saying, that was already a contract in place.
Right.
But I mean, there's games out there when you start digging into it, like Flying Wild Hog are the developers for the Shadow Warrior games. The Shadow Warrior games are pretty well-regarded AA games, borderline AAA. You know, we've already mentioned the Darksiders games. The Darksiders games are pretty well regarded.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're the one. Warhorse Studios are the ones that did Kingdom Come Deliverance, which was a pretty, again, another really well regarded role playing game that came out a couple of years ago. You know, there's definitely stuff out there, right, that fall under this umbrella corporation, this weird umbrella corporation.
I'm gonna keep my eye on him, man. We'll see what's going on.
For sure, I think we need to. Who knows what they could be up to? Yeah, Fish Labs are the Saints Row. Again, Saints Row is a fairly well known series.
Mm-hmm.
So. We'll have to wait and see what it all means in the end.
Yep.
All right, that's all I've got on that. Do you have anything else to say on number three there?
Pretty much covered it.
I think we did too. Another big studio acquisition, though. Like, people are spending money on these studios because you remember Codemasters was just bought recently.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of consolidation going on right now.
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Let's develop a game and see who will buy us.
Yeah, that's easier said than done, isn't it?
Yeah. Tic-tac-toe or some shit. Just make it, put some transactions in there.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. If you pay us $2, you get an extra X.
Exactly. It's pay to win to the max.
Right on, man. All right. Should we go on to new releases?
Let's see what's coming out.
There's actually a lot this week. So Destruction All-Stars is now out on PlayStation, part of PS Plus, if you have it. That came out February 2nd, which was yesterday, Tuesday. Also out yesterday was the Control Ultimate Edition, which was also a part of PS Plus, but you can get it on Xbox as well. Out today is a little indie game called Hebroxia 2. It's $10. It's on Xbox, it's on PlayStation, it's on Nintendo Switch. Like, go try it out. Hyperoxia 2, it's so cool. It's like a little Space Invaders game, but with a story, with levels. It's developed by one guy. This Canadian guy, he's a really cool dude. I play video games with him. He's a big trophy hunter. He's helped me out with securing platinums for like the Far Cry games. But his studio is Lilymo Games, and he works he's partnered with Colin Moriarty, who owns Last End Media. Colin used to be with IGN, and then I'm drawing a blank on the other Kind of Funny was the other one. But he's a podcaster, YouTuber guy, runs Sacred Symbols, the PlayStation podcast, which is the biggest video game podcast on I'm drawing a blank on the subscription platform now. Help me out here, Mike. Patreon. I had Pandora in my head. I was like, it's not Pandora.
I was going to say Pandora.
Patreon. It's the biggest video game podcast in Patreon, but it's great. Hyperoxia 1 was a super, super fun game. They're fairly short. Like I said, it's like a Space Invaders type game, but with a story. I'm excited for this. I've already bought and downloaded it. We should support them. It's cool. It's like one guy developing these games. $10. It's not much. Easy to go check it out.
And right now, I think I just read that Embracer is writing the contract to buy out Lilymo.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I would laugh so hard because Colin is always talking about Embracer and how weird and nefarious it is that they're buying all these studios.
Yeah. It'd
be great if he sold out to them. all right. Next up, coming out tomorrow, February 4th, is The Falconeer. It's launching in Xbox Game Pass 2, another small little game where you play as a falcon. I don't know. Could be fun, but it's launching in Game Pass, so you can check that out for free if you have it. And then finally, on Friday, the Neo Remastered Collection, so that's Neo 1 and 2 remastered for PlayStation 5 in one collection, coming out on Friday. You can also buy them separately if you don't want to buy both. So lots coming out this week, actually, surprisingly.
Cool stuff.
Cool stuff. All right, a few game date announcements. Destiny 2 Season of the Chosen is launching on February 9th.
So, like, my progress toward finishing games is going to take a big-ass dump after that date.
It's great. This is where I can start to really kind of, you know, now I'm finished Valhalla, and you're going to be stuck in Destiny 2, so I'm going to get a big lead here now. So
you already have two games on it because you have Valhalla and that one game, the Street to Rage 4, yeah. So you have two games already. Yeah, I'm like in the process of finishing my second one.
Record?
But yeah, you got to finish it before February 9th, which I don't think will happen, but we'll see.
All right. yeah, February 9th, that's not even that far away. That's, next Tuesday?
Next week, yep.
Yeah. So there you go. Next up, MLB The Show 21 is coming April 20th of this year. This is from that San Diego studio, PlayStation Studio. What's big about this one is they are going to launch this on Xbox One and Xbox Series X as well. So this is a Sony first-party developed game that has been exclusive to PlayStation platforms for its entirety of its life up to this point. But as part of the renegotiations with MLB to secure the license, they are now going to be publishing this. I believe it'll be coming to PC as well. So you can get this on PlayStation, Xbox, or PC. Sony first-party published game. First time this has happened, simultaneous launch on Xbox, much less on other platforms besides PlayStation. So this is a big monumental thing that's happening in just a couple months, April 20th. And then finally, we've already talked about it, but Mass Effect Legendary Edition was dated for May 14th of this year. So several big announcements this past week for new games dated coming up this year.
Right on.
All right. Anything else before we move on out of the show, Mike? Because I think that's about all I got.
No. I'm going to leave it like a question because I'll probably think of something as you're finishing the episode and I turn off the recording.
Well,
but I have nothing.
Mustn't be that important.
Must not be.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening to this here, the 29th episode of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Remember to like, subscribe, review on your podcasting app of choice. And if you have any questions for the show, DM us on Twitter or Facebook. We'd be happy to read them out on the show. Otherwise, we'll be back again next Friday. I don't have anything happening next weekend, so we should be back on our normal schedule of recording on Thursday night and releasing the episode on Friday, episode number 30 next week. So have a great weekend. Stay safe and game hard, everyone.